Well, good morning and welcome to the Tuesday edition of Down to Brass Tacks, the 19th day of June 2018, and I'm happy to be with you. The name is Peter Wickham, assuming that you didn't recognize the voice. And this morning I am in the studio with Mr. Dennis Johnson, who is your technical guru slash producer, and I believe he will also function as the telephonist at some stage during the course of the day. Happy to be with you, and of course we continue with this program until 1 p.m. and at that point we take a break, and then we go back to the Calypso, the crop over based programming schedule. But in the meantime, we're going to have a good conversation. 4341790 is the number you can call. The email you can use is peter.w.wickham@gmail.com, or you can email us at brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. The chat is 266-IVOB. That's 266-IVOB, and those are the facilities that you can use. And I do hope that we'll have a fairly spirited conversation. And generally speaking, when I'm here, the conversation is anything but boring, and I hope that today you won't let me down. Well, we have all kinds of things happening politically, and my challenge is always I don't really know where to start, because it seems as though since the elections on the 24th of May, we've had close to a month, but we have had almost a year's worth of political activity. We've had press conferences, literally left, right, and center. We have had IMF agreements being initiated. We've had IMF agreements being initiated, and then we have also had conversations with the social partners, various other announcements that have been made. We've even had the Fabulous Four, or the Famous Four, or the Infamous Four, as the case may be, holding a press conference on behalf of the Democratic Labour Party. And maybe that's something we can talk about during the course of today. I'm particularly keen, though, on the Prime Minister's remarks yesterday. And let's start with the fact that the Prime Minister appeared in person at the meeting of the authority of the Organization of Eastern Caribbean States. Of course, Barbados was one of the original, or should have been one of the original members of the OECS, in as much as we were part of the Little Eight grouping. And Barbados, of course, smashed the idea by proceeding towards independence. So we cannot be properly considered a member of the grouping. But nonetheless, we've always had an association, and the Prime Minister reminded us that we have a trade imbalance favorably with that part of that region. And certainly that's the only region of the world that we have a trade imbalance with. So it is a relationship that one ought to treasure. And I was happy that the OECS authority thought it appropriate to invite Prime Minister Motley to address him yesterday. I think it signals an interest that they have in this part of the region. And of course, we understand that it is driven in large measure, or should I say in no small measure, by the situation with Liat and the fact that Barbados is now a majority shareholder, and Liat is the glue that holds us all together. So I was happy that she was there, and I was happy that the OECS reached out and that she responded. And I think it signals a direction in relation to OECS Barbados relations, and it signals a relationship that is going to strengthen, and one that I like very much. I think all of you who have heard me on these issues know that I am a very strong regionalist. During the course of her remarks, Prime Minister Motley raised the concern about the fact that persons who are transiting Barbados for several hours are often denied the opportunity to actually leave the airport. So in some instances, the way that Liat schedules run, you may have 3, 4, or 5 hours transit time in between Barbados and St. Lucia or wherever else you're traveling. And in many instances, immigration authorities usher you to a slightly uncomfortable in-transit lounge and suggest that you spend your time waiting there. And if you make a fuss, they tell you, well, there's a larger lounge that you can go to. If you're prepared to be searched a second time, you can go to the larger lounge. But the idea of going outside is something that it has not done. Yesterday, Prime Minister Motley said, and Prime Minister Chastanet agreed, that there was no fundamental reason why this should be the case. And she indicated that she was looking towards a situation where persons who wanted to go outside and explore, they could. Of course, one gets outside of Grand Liellens International Airport, there's not a whole lot to explore, certainly until you get into Oystens. But nonetheless, I think that that's a good start. These are the types of things that boggle my mind as a regional traveler. Why would you say to a person who is already in Barbados that they are not allowed to leave the airport if they're in transit. To me, it makes no sense. I also agree very much with Prime Minister Motley, who has raised concern about this landing card that we have to fill out. My sense is that the landing card is largely irrelevant, and all it does is creates work for someone to key the data, because it's the same data that one will get from the passport, and indeed that one can get from the airline. And any of you who have been into the United States or the United Kingdom recently will notice that we no longer fill those cards simply because they're no longer necessary. You communicate the information to the airline, they communicate that information to the immigration authorities, and when you land, it's all handled electronically without the need for paper, which is cumbersome. So I certainly hope that we move towards a situation where, at least in the first instance, Barbadians are told they no longer need to complete these cards and these forms, and that that would be a step in the right direction. So things seem to be happening in that front. And in other fronts, and I mean, there are other things that we can talk about today. We had a mini budget, which I believe I've commented on. We've had other initiatives being taken in relation to sewage, but we have a lot to talk about. So let's get started. 434-1790 and also 266-IVOB. And I look forward to the first caller and say good morning and welcome.
Hello, good morning, Mr. Wickham.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
Not too well, are you?
I'm good. Good to be with you.
Yeah, a couple of things there. Mm-hmm. The Prime Minister of Barbados has been described by the third parties of a Prime Minister in a hurry. I don't know, sometimes I know we're always in a hurry to get nowhere, so I don't know if this will be a change. She has to slow down, though, because she wants to,
You don't think she got the energy?
Well, it might not be energy also, you know, by aging, you know, you're not as energetic as when you're younger.
You say that my Prime Minister old?
I never told so. I tell, as you get older age, you have to take easy, slow down. Because the good doctor, Professor Henry Fraser, said that chronic diseases start at the age of 40. So we have to be very careful.
Right.
I remember the other thing is that when the after election was called, she was installed and she had the memories of installed. It was said that when she and Sandy Bradshaw and Dr. Clyde Master, to open the cupboards that the dead people left, every cupboard that looking was empty.
Mm-hmm. Oh, it was Santia that was there with her?
I think so. I'm not sure. So I was not a member of UPP. So remember, Tebby, that Santia said that
the cupboards were beer.
Beer.
But, sir, you know, I think when we talk about speed, and I agree that Prime Minister Motley seems to have been moving a bit fast.
Yeah.
Certainly, I must tell you that her energy levels are above normal for politicians and above normal for people generally. And I know the individual personally. Prime Minister Motley has an energy level, especially in the afternoon and at night, that I find fascinating because I am slightly younger than she is. But I am a morning person. She's not. But I find that she works once the day gets going. It's like a train that you can't stop. And certainly all of those who are working have to keep pace. And all I can say is I wish them well in terms of keeping pace with her. Having said that, though, I think a big part of the problem is that we are accustomed to a pace of government which is anything but fast. For the last 8 years, we have been familiar with a government that has been moving at snail's pace, so to speak. And I think the fact that we actually have decisions being taken in a short space of time, you know, the Prime Minister was elected and 2 days later, she obviously communicated with the IMF, and she was talking of missions starting, and you know, it really is a lot about to do with the fact that we are not accustomed to that kind of pace. So let's just bear that in mind.
Yeah, but I somehow.
So you feel she needs to slow down?
Yeah, she needs to slow down. Do one thing at a time, get that thing sorted out, then she can start on something different. But she won't do too many things at one time with limited resources. The other thing, too, I would suggest her to eat some of our Lynette cooking. It's well favored.
Lynette who?
Eastman cooking is well favored. I don't know if you have a taste or dish.
Lynette never cooked for me. Mia cooked for me, but Lynette never cooked for me.
Oh.
You know about Lynette's cooking?
I heard so. I don't know anything about it. I never tasted it yet.
Well, I would be glad. I mean, the thing is that of late, she hasn't been very sweet on me. So I haven't been invited over for a meal. But certainly if I were invited over for a meal, I would come even without a taste tester because I don't believe she would do me nothing. So I would be glad to taste her hand.
I think somehow she feels very obnoxious, you know.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
parties.
Which is not, I mean, I don't have a problem with the lady.
Uh-huh.
So you want Prime Minister Motley to eat Lynette Eastman's cooking?
Yeah, it might have her slow though and look at things in a different perspective.
Sir, it's been good chatting with you. That's something to think about. Sharing one another food, that's always a good thing. This is Dr. Brassatz. Oh, sorry, I have a WhatsApp message here regarding the first comment. Peter, the concern would be that a person could use the in-transit opportunity if allowed to go outside and stay here illegally. No, I'm glad that you raised that point, sir, because I think you also know that I have some issues with this whole illegality. If we are building a regional community, right, we want people to move around the region and to live and work. What's this nonsense about illegal? What is our great concern that a person who comes in transit might stay here illegally? Is a person who comes in transit more likely to stay here illegally than a person who comes in destined for Barbados? The fact of the matter is that if you are coming into Barbados, the things that you need to stay here legally will be a ticket back out. And if you're in transit, you have a ticket back out. What's the problem? You know, I don't get it. I think that honestly is a concern that is highly overrated. And I think it is not fit nicely within the context of what I understand a Caribbean community to be. Next caller. Good morning, sir.
Morning, Peter.
How are you doing?
Not too bad at all.
Good.
Let me play that first caller off my bad earlier clock. If he had any knowledge of the period between 1961 and 66, he would not talk about Mayor Motley slowing down, my Prime Minister slowing down.
Or eating food. From Lynette.
Because that was the most aggressive 5-year period of the Democratic Labour Party.
You said 51 to 66?
61 to 66.
61 to 66, yeah.
Yeah, you know, even at the end of the 66, they had independence.
I know the interesting thing is that during that time is the dip of food people was eating.
Yeah, and he had young people behind him like Mayor Martin, you know.
And he was apparently in Colonial Farm cooking food and things.
Exactly. All right, let me go on now. First, before I go into my two major points I want to deal with, let me thank St. Lucie people for granting me my wish and St. John Bosco the editing it. I think this is election that I really was involved in St. John election, and I feel proud about it because I achieved what I wanted.
Are you going to keep that seat, though?
Huh?
Do you think you can keep that seat?
Well, that is what I am programming now. I spoke to my candidate up to Sunder, and they mapping out a program for retention.
Okay.
And I get to that. I'll tell you about that later on.
All right.
Now, let me go on now to what we consider. You remember Straker's tenantry? I want to be gerrymandering, but I want you to refer back. I will call this reflection on the program by Peter Wiggleman myself. this is what we're doing now, right? Now, you can recall Straker's tenantry started out on a mission looking at constituency branches and constituencies and how much to win by and how much to lose by. And he was calculating what would be the outcome. You remember that?
Yep.
And you remember I called in and told you don't get involved in that. Because that's nonsense.
But I want to get involved now, but he ain't calling me.
Because I told you that in St. Thomas in 1971, the late Tom Adams beat Neville Boxer by 64 votes.
Mm-hmm.
And they brought J.L. Happy Brand, who they believe as a younger candidate, a more aspiring candidate than Boxer, that he would have tackled Tom Adams. And Tom Adams beat, that's when they win in 76, by over 1,000 votes.
Mm-hmm.
I would like you to look at Santiago Bradshaw when he was talking about these 9 votes and said they'd be easy to wipe off, and look and see what she received now. Now, let me go on to gerrymandering, I can be sure. That is only a reflection. You recall I told you that the late Aribert did some gerrymandering in 71 when he took Orange Hill off of St. James and put on St. Andrew, and he won in 71. And the St. Michael's seats he cut up, and that is what we call gerrymandering pattern. You remember I told you that this time around it can come back to haunt them? You remember I told you that?
Mm.
You see what happened in Orange Hill? You see what happened to that orange box?
But when I do my girl bad enough, man.
Did the LP candidate anybody get a vote?
Man, when I do my candidate bad enough in Orange Hill.
And you recall, I told you, we were dealing with these housing areas. I told you, if you put a man in a house and he is not working, the expenditure he has to go into is going to affect him. And we start talking about growing little things in the wind and all such like plants. And I told you, look out, that these people are going to get destroyed with this. You see, the results ain't going to further. We can talk some more about somebody else called. But I was only very friend to you. And recall that I spoke of this. And before I go, I had a chat with Hartley Henry. Mm-hmm. Now, Hartley Henry told me he did looking at 25 to 27 seats. I said, Hartley, you are more political minded than I do. But I am actually a person who practices politics. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm involved in St. Lucie. Mm-hmm. And St. John, as I told you on this year, and as long as they get St. Lucie and St. John, they get all 30. And so said, so done. I really tell him that.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. We talk. This is Dr. Brassatz. We'll be right back. Peter, you need to be careful with your eating habits. And I think this is a comment with regard to Lynette Eastman. I don't know whether they think that Lynette will cook Bigfoot sauce for me and if I would make the mistake and eat it. The other comment says, Peter, that first caller was talking nonsense, and the nonsense is my word, not the one that they used. Apparently, Lynette Eastwood is a very good cook. And this is another WhatsApper telling me that she cooks, I guess it's a version of chicken, very well. Peter, your thoughts on Liz Thompson's lack of being named publicly to any appointment by my government? I'm thinking you ambassador or EU ambassador. I'm thinking after bringing her in during the campaign from abroad, it's only fitting to give a publicly noted post. After all, Ms. McConney has also been returned to a post. And let's just say, suffice to say, sir, let's not get ahead of ourselves. The day is yet young, and I'm sure that we've not heard the last of Liz Thompson yet. Peter, Mia is not a slow train. She's a worker. She is not the DLP train, slow and stand still. Last administration party for 9 days. Peter told the caller that the Prime Minister's pace is in tune with international standards, and instead of criticizing her, they should get off their bottom and do some work. Tell them time will tell that tide waits for no man, and the stupidity is astounding. Peter, we haven't had a garbage collection in Ashbyland, Lodge Road, for the last 2 weeks. Down to Brastacks, good morning. Good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Peter.
Good morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, you know.
I'm good.
Now, Peter, I must say this to you first thing. Mm-hmm. Your first caller, you know, he always talking about he surrounds himself with these university graduates who always give him some sort of information. But it seems to me as though he surrounded himself with these graduates, he still can't learn or would not learn anything whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned also about the Fabulous Four, Peter. I saw on the back page of Sandy Sun, the same Fabulous Four you mentioned about. And it seems to me as though they are not concerned about the decision the people of this country made during the last election. And it seems as though they just believe that they should come and force themselves on the people of this country again. Mm. But that would not happen, Peter. Because, first, I must say, I saw Reverend John apologizing for the Democrat Labour Party and asking these same fellows to apologize as well to the people of the country for their behavior. But, you know, during the course of that time, during the election campaign, Reverend John was part and parcel of this bill, and you haven't heard one single word from him until now, after the results has been known. And I find it real strange, Peter, that he would come at this point of time to ask them to apologize for their behavior.
What's strange about it?
But Peter, because I don't think if the Democrat Labour Party had won the election, you would hear the same,
of course not,
same statements coming from
him. But then there would be nothing to apologize for?
You wouldn't be hearing it?
If the DLP had won, it would prove that the stance and the position that they were taking was correct. It would also prove that we were a pretty stupid bunch of people, but, you know.
So I really disappointed to hear him say that.
I'm not disappointed. But, sir, I got to say this. Sorry to interrupt you, but the thing that worries me is that I feel that we have to give people fair. Fair is fair, right? If a guy runs a campaign and it's a bad campaign, and I acknowledge and you acknowledge it was a bad campaign, thus far, the Reverend is the only person from the Democratic Labour Party that has come into the public forum and said, look, we did nonsense.
Fair enough.
And to me, for us to say that he's either disingenuous or for us to say that we don't accept his apology, to me is unfortunate. Because if it is that we are saying, look, what we want from the DLP is an acknowledgement that things were not prosecuted properly. He's essentially given that from his own perspective. No, it would be great if that could come from Prime Minister Stewart, but it's not going to come from him.
Or the General Secretary
of the Party. Or General Secretary of the Party, or any of the other, or the manager of the party, Bobby Morris. I've done programs with Bobby Morris subsequently, and Bobby Morris has held this position that says, look, we lost the election because we took hard decisions. Well, he is saying that we ran a bad campaign, and I think that that is an important point that we have to acknowledge. So if the Reverend says it, I have to admit that the Reverend is one of these people I have never really had a lot of use for, because I think, you know, I have, I am not as trusting as religious people as I probably should be, you know, and I have had some issues with him in the past and on the David Thompson scenario and the fact that he promised, he talked to the Lord and the Lord tell him, and, you know, all of this kind. I have not had the best of regard for the individual, but I have to admit he is growing in my estimation, because if this is the way he is starting, I think that at least that's a start. I would love to have heard that from the Fabulous Four.
So Peter, even though I may agree with you, I mean, you had people like Steve Blackett, and Steve Blackett is on record saying he has no apologies to make to no one.
Well, then,
So that's why I say I would prefer here. Matt Fry's only one apology from the fellas anyway, because the people have already spoken, and in spite of whatever, no apology could never erase the damage that they have done to themselves. You know, so I believe they remain in the same mode they are right now, but don't come to force and stuff on people of Barbados. Now, let's speak about James Paul. I hear James Paul mentioning about he wants a meeting with the Minister of Agriculture, Peter.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the same James Paul sat on a backbench with the Democratic Labour Party administration prior to the last election. And when the world rates were being increased to 60%, I haven't heard one single word from James Paul concerning the farmers who are going to be suffering from the same increase.
Mm-hmm.
And I also recall, Peter, that the sugarcane farmers had a serious problem dated back for almost 4 or 5 years, where they could not get the drawdowns, and that they had some sort of money were allocated to the sugarcane farmers. And they had the first tranche, they draw down the first tranche, Peter. And when the same sugarcane farmers went to draw the second tranche, the money were not there for them to take the second taking. Mm-hmm. It was not there at all. And the farmers complained. If you remember, Bethel, I don't remember his first name, he complained about it, but no one knew where this money went or where it gone to up to this present day. And they haven't heard one single word from James Paul. But all of a sudden now he know farmers, and he know farmers got a concern. I can remember also the same James Paul, Peter, when we had the illegal importation of chicken wings in Barbados. When he went to the press and the Minister of Consumer Affairs, then Donville Ennis, drag him over the coals and tell him, don't go to the press, come to him. And right away, James Paul went silent and no one heard nothing since concerning that matter from James Paul. I don't know if you can respond.
No, I can recall. I don't know if I can respond. But James Paul is going to have a challenge on his hands getting action from this government. And I think that his ability to be effective as BAS chief will be severely compromised under current circumstances. That's the best I could tell you. So
but because all of a sudden now he know there's farmers, and he know farmers got concerns. And the farmers was crying out for long, long while.
Yeah.
Both the poultry farmers and the sugarcane farmers as well. Mm-hmm. The dairy farmers as well had a problem with the feed. And you never hear he asking for a meeting with Dr. Esmith at that point in time when he missed mm-hmm. agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
So now he wants a meeting with the incoming old minister in such a short space of time. I just can't comment on this. No further, man. I say a good
buddy. All right, sir. Thanks a lot. I got an email just now from my good friend, Marlon Rice Bowen. She continues to be my good friend, as is Irene Sandy for Garner. And Marlon was telling me that I need to look into this whole question of this box that apparently Irene Sandy for Garner got no votes in. I heard it election night, and I heard it repeated. And I remember listening to a video clip from Patrick King. And it was very entertaining in the way that Patrick put it. But, you know, all jokes aside, truth be told, I have the official data from the electoral office, which they actually only released last week, Friday. So I was really not in a position to comment before on this. That electoral data shows all boxes from AA1 to AE3. Irene Sandiford Garner received votes. The box in which she was supposed to have received no votes, which would be the AA1 box, which is the Orange Hill box, she actually received 89 votes. Of course, George Payne received 108, but she received 89 votes. So, and I looked through the list of boxes here in St. Andrew. She received a total of 1,123 votes. George Walton Payne received a total of 4,063 votes. But there was no votes in, no boxes in St. Andrew in which Irene Sandiford Garner received no votes. She was soundly beaten, there's no question about that. But it would be unfair to say that she received no votes in any box, and let's just clarify for the record. And I'm speaking with reference to the official data from the Electoral Office, which was released to the media and to other select people last week, Friday. And that data does not show any box in St. Andrew in which Irene Sandiford Garner received no votes. There was a box in which she received 10 votes. There was a box in which she received 11 votes. Those were the two lowest, but there was no box in which she received no votes. Okay. Thank you for drawing that to my attention. I appreciate the reminder from my good friend Marlon Rice Bowen. Marlon Rice Bowen is also a good cook, and she is a person who I am prepared to eat from any time at all. She has a particularly good curry hand, as one can say. So I hope that now the elections are out of the way, she and I can get back to matters of that nature in the shortest possible time. Dr. Brastacks, good morning.
Good morning to you, Peter.
Morning, sir. How are you doing?
I'm good. I'm good. What about yourself?
I'm great, man. I'm great.
It's interesting that you mentioned my video, and since that you have made the correction, I think that I owe an apology to Sandiford Garner.
Oh, there's Patrick?
Yeah, of course. Because, you know,
that video was sweet, though.
Sandiford Garner had a concern that the cabinet was big, you know. So
yeah.
I had to remind her.
Yeah, the box was big.
that wasn't the only thing that big. Right? But it just goes to show, you know, the nonsense that the Democrats never haven't gotten over the dirty love. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, right, Peter? And if I die now, the arts will bring the news to me. Mm-hmm. That on the next occasion, which is the next general election, that it can be a dirty love again too, Peter. Mark my word, it can be a dirty love similar to what took place in Grenada. Same mm-hmm. thing can happen. Because that crowd that going, I don't think nobody wanted it. I heard you talk about the Fabulous Four. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, Peter, I don't know if the Fabulous Four should got the conscience or the guts to even be entertaining the press to talk about a presentation brought by the Prime Minister last Monday. In circumstances where every single budget, thank God we didn't have one from them in 2018, but every single one at their hands, the people in this country suffer, every single one, and they got the guts to formulate a union and calling the press to be picking down a budget that somebody present. But it's unheard of in the party world, you know. But I want to speak to you this morning, Peter, on this whole sewage and water contribution tax, right? Mm-hmm. And I break it down, the $150 per day for the citizens, which is equates to $45 monthly added to the bill, and 75 cents per day for the pensioners, and then 50 cents for the most vulnerable, and then rebates the Prime Minister spoke about to large families who normally access the thing to the means of welfare. I've heard yesterday and all last week about people, the concern was expressed, and Dennis Johnson spoke it yesterday, about if you don't pay the water bill, and I heard a caller talking about the people with pit toilets at disadvantage and all that kind of thing. It certainly tells me people that we are not thinking, because all the houses in this country that carry pit toilets have water attached to the very house. Have water attached to the very house. So if you have water attached to your house, you mean you're cooking, you're washing, you're bathing, and you're doing all the only thing that you are doing outside of that is going outside to use the facility outside. But the house has a meter attached to it, and you are using water. So don't let anybody confuse you about somebody with a pit toilet is unfair to a person who got a pit toilet. The rubbish. Nonsense, Peter. Because every single house in this country that have a pit toilet, they have waterborne facilities attached to them. May not be the toilet, but to the kitchen pipe and other areas inside the house, right? So let us settle the issue. The bottom line is you don't pay. The money is being attached to the water bill, which we make it an overall bill. The separation comes when the money is paid in. The departments that handle the separation as to what goes where, right? And if you don't pay, the clipper, who's known as the disconnection man.
Does they call it the clipper?
The clipper. The clipper will come.
I cut you off your water.
And it would make you a little uneasy till you decide that you will make your contribution.
But Patrick, I heard Dennis yesterday chatting with a guy about it. The guy seemed to have been concerned about this whole idea that the clipper would come and cut off the water for not paying the tax. But I don't know about you, but I never pay my solid waste tax, right? I would defend myself and say that I didn't pay because I didn't have the money to pay. But I know a lot of people that paid it, but I never had the ability to pay, so I never paid it. The point is that a tax, you should not have an option to pay a tax.
No,
a tax should be mandatory. So my thing is, I don't pay my land tax, I take out my land. I don't pay my water bill, they cut off the water. I don't pay electricity, they cut it off. But the big problem I had with that tax that Chris brought was that I thought it was punitive, it was one-off.
And discriminatory.
It was discriminatory against me that owned a house, as somebody that rented a house and got paid nothing. And I thought that was unfair, and they assumed that because you live in a large house, that you generating a lot of sewage, which is, for some of us, it is not the reality. You know, so I like this one, and one of the things I like about it is that it's efficient because you don't have a choice not to pay. Because if you don't pay, they cut off your water. Now, if you are in a situation where you genuinely are not in a position to pay, their facility is there, the welfare facility is there.
But you know, made
that
point.
And that's something that people have to exploit. So you come to the welfare, you say, look, I can't pay my water bill. What relief can I receive? But there's no way somebody like you, Patrick, that got money should be able to not pay the tax and get away with it. They cut off your water.
The flip side to this, right, is that why I allowed the Prime Minister in her efforts to with the sewage and mm-hmm. water contribution tax, I want to go on the other side now, Peter, and that is that I'm calling on the Minister of Tourism this morning and the Minister of Commerce to review the lifetime concessions that was given not only to Sandals, but also to Costulus. And that if Barbadians are asked to pay and must and should contribute by way of whatever means or methods put in place for them to contribute, then I don't believe that a hotelier who have lifetime concessions should not be paying. That's the bottom line. So if we got to remove the duty-free status with the cars that come in to start the Sandals group, or if we got to review the importation of goods that are duty free, but we got to get some money. We can't be holding the people in this country hostage to a board tax and then allow Gordon Bookstore mm-hmm. and Costulus and those people who have benefited from lifetime concessions to continue. It can't be business as usual.